Good afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. This is a recorded show, and it's one that hopefully will get you and your kids ready for summer camp. So without any more, let's move right on to a segment we recorded with Bo Mongold from YLI Camps at Clemson. Now, I would like to welcome Bo Mongold from the Youth Learning Institute Camps at Clemson to the air. Bo, thank you for calling in.
Hey, Roger. Appreciate it, man. No problem.
Yes, sir. We paid phone tag for a good bit this week. I know you were in meetings and I was traveling, that sort of thing. But tell us what you do in your capacity with the Youth Learning Institute.
Absolutely. Clemson University's Youth Learning Institute is an institute within the university that develops and operates year-round youth development programs. The Youth Learning Institute is a vital component of Clemson's youth outreach effort and helps fulfill the university's mission of public service. We operate six facilities across the state of South Carolina, and we run five summer camps. Now, we run year-round programs at all those facilities, summer camp being one of those vital components that we operate.
So these camps run year-round.
Yes, sir. We have partnerships with DSS. We have partnerships with DJJ. We have partnerships with many state agencies as well as private organizations that allow us to operate environmental ed programs. We operate behavioral modification programs. We operate, just basic conference center facilities as well. So it's a year-round rental capacity that we have across the state.
You know what I'm learning in this job? It's not a job. What I'm learning doing this show is that there are always layers to everything you touch.
Right.
And I look at this and I say, oh, summer camps. But here we go year round with this thing. But
that's
it
right.
It is summertime, and it's parents are getting ready to find a place to put their kids for a week. Get them out of the house. Maybe that's the sole reason, or the kids are like dying, climbing the walls. I want to go to camp this year. I know I always enjoyed going. I mean, what a better place to turn a canoe over, figure out there's an air pocket underneath, and give your camp counselors a heart attack.
That's right. That's exactly right. So we have five of those camps that we operate in the summertime. I mean, like I said, we kind of tailor our camps to specific needs and wants of kiddos, and so just theme wise we've got a bunch of those. So I don't know if you want to just start. You want me to just start talking about?
Yes, sir. Let's start off with the 4-H summer camp.
All right, 4-H summer camp is operated at Camp Bob Cooper in Summerton, South Carolina, as well as at Camp Long in Aiken, South Carolina. So the first half of the summer in June we'll be at Camp Long, and then we'll move the operation to Camp Bob Cooper in July. And that is a traditional summer camp. That's where you tip the canoe over, like you were talking about earlier. So,
great.
That's our traditional summer camp where, the kids are going to participate in arts and crafts. They're going to swim a lot. They've got canoeing, nature hikes, ropes courses, climbing walls, dances, talent shows, all those types of things. So that is your, pretty much when you think of summer camp, that's the typical traditional summer camp experience.
That's where I was. They only had one camp when we went.
Everybody right.
went to the same camp, and you did the same things every week. But it was great. Although I think back when I was going to camp, seems like we did have the little 22s, the little
Absolutely.
Single shot 22s. You had to work the bolt and pull the firing pin.
That's right. That's right. Well, what we've done is we have created a separate camp, Camp Wildlife, which is shooting sports.
That's the next one on the list.
Yeah, and that camp is again, it's operated at Camp Bob Cooper as well, and that camp is a specialty camp that we geared towards kids that love the outdoors and love shooting sports. And so kids will come to camp and they'll participate in sporting clays, shooting, they'll shoot rifles for target practice, archery, 3D archery. We've got ATVs that they can ride. Of course, we teach them hunting skills and wildlife ecology as well. So it's a very much your outdoor. Probably fits your show Woods and Water pretty well. Your listeners, anyways. So Kent Wildlife is a great camp that is a, like I said, it's a specialty camp in the area of shooting sports and hunting skills and wildlife ecology. So.
Can I add the 4 and the 6 in my age and come up with 10 and come to one of these camps?
Well, you can maybe. We can talk about that.
I mean, it sounds like so much fun.
Well, it is. And I mean, you know, the thing about summer camp is that it's a great opportunity for kids growing up in this technological age where we are able to provide such a positive experience where kids are safe. It's a nurturing environment. You know, we've got caring, competent adult role models, you know, healthy developmental, trying to provide a healthy developmental experience for those kids is, you know, easy to do in the natural world. And so all of these camps you're going to see have aspects of it, of the natural world in them. Even our technology camp, you know, we Camp Voyager, which is our technology and science-based summer camp.
Right.
That camp is a camp that's operated in Pickens, South Carolina, at our headquarters and education center. I'm very close to Clemson, and it is, you know, that camp, even though those kids are gonna participate in, they're gonna build Lego robotics, they're gonna have Lego robotics competitions, they're gonna race RC cars, remote control cars, what they're gonna do is they're gonna do that stuff, but they're also gonna get outside on the go-kart track. They're gonna race or they're gonna drive go-karts on our go-kart track, and they're gonna do we've got a 250-foot zip line on camp, and so, you know, they're gonna learn some of these things on the video games and on the computer games at camp, but then we're gonna apply them outside in the natural environment and see what the difference is. Hey, what's the difference in the video game versus going outside and playing paintball?
Correct.
So,
yeah, there's a lot of kids who are involved in the video game. I think they lose touch with reality. And reality to them is just hitting the reset button. But I think video games have a place, but you have to keep things in perspective too. And getting them out and outside, and look, there's a whole world out here besides this. I think that's wonderful. I see the paintball on here, and I notice there's no shooting each other on the Camp Wildlife one.
Well, that's right. That's very intentional that we do not play paintball during Camp Wildlife. So if you're going to camp for Camp Wildlife, if you want to learn about shooting sports and shooting shotguns and shooting rifles and air rifles, again, that's a progression too, where we start with the air rifles and
right.
then move up to the real guns. But that is a good observation. That's very intentional.
Okay.
We are only going to shoot each other with paint when it's a camp that doesn't have anything to do with firearms.
That's good.
You know.
The next one, Camp Hannon.
That, you know, Camp Hannon is our, actually our newest summer camp.
Okay.
We developed that summer camp about 6 years ago, and it is our adventure camp. So if you are, it's based out of Sunset, South Carolina.
Right.
A lot of people may or may not know where that is, but that's up Highway 178. In the upstate there.
Right.
So it is based out of that camp and they will basically spend 6 days going on adventures from Camp Hannon. So they'll be based in camp. We've got some beautiful dorms there. They'll spend the night there, but every day they're gonna get up and head out on a hike, you know. They're gonna go rock climbing in Pisgah. They might go to mountain biking in the area, whitewater rafting, and much more. So that is our true outdoor adventure camp. That one has kind of also for a little bit older age group. All of our camps are from anywhere from the age of 8 to 17, depending on the camp you pick.
Okay.
So we also have a mini camp for a little younger kids, 7 to 9 years old. And that's a shortened camp at Camp Bob Cooper. So this adventure camp, that's, you know, it's our outdoor adventure camp where you're going to really get immersed in the outdoor world and you're climbing rock and you are, you know, hiking and all that kind of good stuff. So
I saw the mini camp for the younger kids, and I also see on Camp Hannon you have an Expeditions, which is a primitive camping.
That's right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So those are kind of the two opposites. You know, mini camp, Camp Bob Kubrick, that's going to be 7 to 9 year olds, short and sweet. It's only a 3-night experience. So those kiddos that are ready to try camping out, or try camp, but not quite. Usually it's the parents aren't quite ready for their kiddo to go for the whole week.
Okay.
So they go to mini camp for a couple of days and try it out.
Okay.
And then next year they can go to a regular camp.
Regular camp.
That's right. But, yeah, the excursions, they head out. What we do with our adventure excursions is, meet a camp hand on that first day. We'll spend a day or two getting some basic skills down for, setting up tents and, you know, proper hiking techniques and, all those kinds of things, and then we'll head out on the trail, and they'll do some primitive camping for a couple of nights, and they'll bike, they'll hike around, camping out, then they'll bike around, and they'll camp out along the way. So it's really a 10-day camp. It's really about a 7-day excursion where they are out camping out in the wilderness, and they'll touch base back at camp along the way every so often as well. So.
And then if you have salt water in your veins, you have Camp Seawee.
I tell you, man, it's Camp Seawee is a 44-acre piece of property that is on the Intracoastal Waterway in the Francis Marion National Forest. So it's one of the most special places that any of South Carolinians might not know about. Allendale is one of the most pristine environments we have from a marine resources standpoint. And so... down there at Camp Seawee in Allendale, you've got a marine science based camp where kids are doing everything they can to raise the next generation of marine biologists. And so you're talking about crabbing and cast netting and salt marsh studies where they get in the salt marsh and play in that wonderful fluff mud and find out how it's not quite such good mud to walk in. We'll take them out to Capers Island to do a Barrier Island beach study. They'll spend all day out there, kayaking, tubing, swimming, of course, in that salt water. We also take the kids to the water park in Charleston, and then also the aquarium, the Charleston Aquarium. So it's a really, really neat camp. They will also be exposed to environmental education through the Center for Birds of Prey and the Pee Wee Environmental Education Center as well. So.
Well, look, I appreciate you being on. How do they get a hold of you real quick?
www.ylicamp.com or just ylicamp.com.
Well, look, if you have a 40-something-year-old man show up for camp 1 week, treat him nicely.
Well, we'll have to make sure that we do the appropriate screening and background checks and all that. But other than that, yeah, that's fine.
Thanks, Bo. That was Bo Mongold with Clemson YLI Camps. Got some great camps there. Now I want to play the segment we recorded with Dan Dupree from Camp Wildwood, which is the Department of Natural Resources camp over at Kings Mountain. Mr. Dupree is on the air with us. He is the camp director, a camp coordinator at Camp Wildwood, which is a DNR camp. Dan, thank you for calling in.
I'm glad I could, Roger. I'm glad to be with you all today.
You are a busy man these days, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. From sun up to sundown, seems like this time of year.
Well, it's a good time of the year to be busy. At least it's pretty outside.
Yes, sir.
Now, you are the camp coordinator for Camp Wildwood, correct?
That is correct. That is my title.
Okay. And when we talked earlier, I was talking about progressive camp, but the air is yours. Tell us what Camp Wildwood is all about.
Well, Camp Wildwood is a unique opportunity for the youth of South Carolina to be immersed in the life of, say, a DNR employee. That's really what it comes down to. We focus on stewardship and conservation of our natural resources. And when I say youth, it's unique because it's geared towards campers that are actually a little bit older than the typical camp age. We look in for campers that are going to 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. And we have a wonderful curriculum that gets them out and about hands-on, and they have tons of fun doing that.
That would be the kind of camp I would like to go to.
Oh, me too.
It says here approximately 100 will be in the first camp. Now, we're talking about a progressive camp. So the first year, what are these kids going to do?
All right, the first year is that camp, and let me kind of back up really quick.
Okay.
Camp Wildwood is an umbrella for three different programs. And the first program is the one that everybody looks at Camp Wildwood as, and that's the one that you just spoke of, which is typically 100 campers. They're co-ed, 50-50.
Okay.
And this is mostly a educational curriculum. And just to give you an example of some of the classes that we teach there, we have forestry, hunter education, we have boater education, fisheries, wildlife, we have archery, and all of these are taught by certified DNR instructors. And so that is really the heart of the program. And then, of course, in the evenings and the afternoons, we have the typical sports and different evening activities that just teenagers these days love and they just really enjoy.
Yeah, I see dances, campfires, and skit night.
Yes, sir. And then we have a few things that we just don't publicize because we want to make it somewhat of an experience that is just somewhat of a surprise. And that's really what we kind of approach it, and it's always memorable to them.
Any kind of surprise at camp is a good one.
Exactly.
And this camp takes place at Kings Mountain?
Kings Mountain State Park.
Okay.
And a lot of people know of the Kings Mountain, the military park, which is in North Carolina.
Right.
But Kings Mountain State Park is located right on the border in York County. And it's a wonderful place, and they've hosted Camp Wildwood since 1985. And we really appreciate all that they do for Camp Wildwood State Park System.
Now, Camp Wildwood is sponsored by whom?
Well, our main sponsor, the two main sponsors, people that I'm employed by, of course, is the Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
And our other really important sponsor is the Garden Clubs of South Carolina. And why I say they're the main sponsors, because they're the ones that thought they had the insight 60 years ago to come up with a conservation camp. And they knew they couldn't do it alone, so they looked at the Department of Natural Resources and the resources that we had, and we partnered with them, and it's been a wonderful relationship for over 60 years. Now, our other big sponsors that we've picked up along the way is, of course, our South Carolina Wildlife Federation. We also have the State Park, the Harry Hampton Wildlife Memorial Fund, and those are our really big sponsors that help us out every year.
Great. Okay, so kids, those 100 kids go to Camp Wildwood year number one as a 10th grader.
That's correct.
And then what happens the second year?
Well, of course, every kid that goes through the camp are wonderful. But there's always a few out there that are just gung-ho about our natural resources that might see it as maybe a career opportunity. And so we actually choose 20 of those 100 to come back for the second year program. And that one is held at the same time as the first year program. So they've gone through camp the year before, they come back, and those 20 will actually, they stay at camp for a day, but then they go off to Walhalla Fish Hatchery, and they camp out for 4 days up there, and they go whitewater rafting. They do more outdoor skills development. They go rappelling and high ropes. And so it's not necessarily focused on, say, a curriculum, educational curriculum.
Okay.
It's more geared towards furthering their outdoor skills development, making them leaders within their community, and also learning other opportunities, how they can get involved at their young age to make a difference in their community. So that's really what the second-year program is.
Okay. Yeah, a note here on the thing says, don't forget hiking boots.
Yes, they do a great deal of hiking with the second-year program. I don't know if you've ever been to Walhalla Fish Hatchery.
Oh, I have.
It's that there's a nice hill, and they hike that whole thing up and down, and they just have a great time. We've seen the occasional bear up there, so it's quite interesting when they see the bear. And then they turn around and say, you know what, you're going to have to sleep out there too. So it's a good example of how to camp and not have the little snacks in their camp tents and stuff like that. So we've had a good time. There's some chuckles, but we still make them do that.
Good, good. Okay, now, you've gone through the first year, you've been invited back for the second year, you've gone through the second year, and now third year comes up.
Third year, which is my favorite program that I coordinate and that I participate in myself. And that one is we invite all the second year, and we go from being up in the mountains, and it's called a coastal adventure. It's 1 month after the first and second year. So first year you're gone, second year you're gone, and the third year that you're part of the program, you're down on the coast, and you want to learn anything and everything. everything you want to know, from everything from the low country down to our beaches. And so we go and we watch loggerhead sea turtles hatch. We go to the aquarium. They're one of our sponsors, and they let us go behind the scenes, and we do some crabbing and surf fishing and beach ecology, beach geology, and we stuff all that in 1 week in July. It's hot, but we have a great time doing it. And we also, our main focus is these are our leaders that eventually they want to go into the natural resources careers. So we have Clemson, we have College of Charleston. They come down, they do a good bit of talking and letting them know that if you want to go into this, they provide opportunities for them, and we get a lot of campers that eventually end up in the natural resources career.
Great, and that's what we need. We need to develop the leaders of tomorrow today.
Exactly, and that's one great thing about this program.
Now, how much? It's approximately $200 a week now. Is that $200 for each camp, or does that price go up every year?
That is a price that we have, that's our price point we figured out in the last few years. We do not see it going up any higher anytime soon. And we're kind of proud of that price, because if anybody's ever tried to send a camper, especially those teenage campers, off for a week, we like to say we're the least expensive camp that you can find, because $200 is a bargain. And that's because it's subsidized to the Garden Clubs of South Carolina. They donate a lot of money towards the camp, not specifically to a camper. So we're able to have that camp, that camper have a wonderful experience for such a low price.
That is a good price. Dan, how do people get in touch with you if they want more information? I understand there are still open camping spots available for this year.
Yes, sir. There's a few spots left, definitely. And I have several ways that you can find out. First off, more information about the Camp Wildwood program. And one way is, of course, you can call me, and my phone number is 803-609-1072. And my email address, and the easiest one that I tell people, is Wildwood, just like Camp Wildwood, but it's wildwood@gmail.com. And you can go to our website. And the best way to get to our website is just do a Google search of Camp Wildwood of South Carolina, and or you can go to the DNR website, which is dnr.sc.gov, and right there on the home page of the DNR website, there should be a button on your right that says Camp Wildwood. So those are the main ways that you can get in touch with me when it comes to the Camp Wildwood program, and also to see if there are some spots available.
Dan, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate the job y'all are doing down there at Camp Wildwood. I would love to come visit if we could arrange that. And yesterday when I was looking at the Facebook page, you had a great Facebook post up there, and it says, "This world needs more tackle boxes and less Xboxes."
Amen.
And I also noticed one more interesting thing, and some kids are not going to like this, but of course the kids are going to go to this kind of camp are not going to worry. It on each page, as you go through the different camps, the year one, the year two, the year three, each one of them off to the right-hand side has a big square, one of those red circles with a slash through it, and a cell phone underneath, and it says, "No cell phones allowed at camp."
And what's really great about that is that we do occasionally might have a camp or two that did not come or attend camp because of that. But every person, especially last year, our theme of camp was look up, meaning quit looking down at your cell phone, at your iPad. Look up and see who's in front of you and to engage with them. And that's really the theme that we had going on last year. And it translates well to the youth, even though that they are centered towards that phone in their hand. Once they have an opportunity like this to step away from it, they come, and I had so many campers last year said, "Thank you for showing me that there's a world outside of texting and Facebook and things." They are good tools, but there are certain times that we need to get out and just enjoy our natural resources. We can do that from behind the phone. That's kind of what we promote there at Camp Wildwood.
Well, Dan, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I look
anytime.
Forward to working with you more and hearing what some of these campers enjoy during the year.
All right. Appreciate it, Roger. Thanks for the time.
All right, Dan. Take care. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to go to summer camp. Forget January, February, March, and April. Hope you enjoyed it. Come back on the other side. We're going to do the interview with Anthony Gagliardi. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Like at the beginning of the show, this is a taped one. Some of the best segments, I thought, from this past year. And one of the really great times I had was at the FLW Cup on Lake Murray in August. Spent a lot of time with the pros. And the winner was Anthony Gagliardi. And I think we had a great interview. I hope you enjoy hearing it again. As Anthony Gagliardi finished off an incredible season on the FLW Tour, on possibly the biggest stage in bass fishing history, with a win at the 2014 Forest Wood Cup right down the road in Columbia, South Carolina. And Anthony is on the phone with you, and I want to welcome you to the Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be here.
I really appreciate it. And we're going to try to get you into the game. How's that?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Anthony's down there tailgating at Clemson today, his alma mater, and he was good enough to join us today. We'll get right to it, Anthony. Tell us about the rule and what happened on Lake Okeechobee.
Oh, man. I'd like to. I told this story probably one or two more times than I'd rather. But, yeah, it was just an oversight on my part. We have a new rule in state for this year that says we can't be on a body of water, you know, the tournament that we're fishing. We can't be on that body of water with somebody that's not confirmed in that event.
Okay.
30 days leading up to our official practice period. It's not a no-information rule. We can still talk to people. You can still get help. You can still get GPS waypoints if you want to. You're just not allowed to have somebody in your boat.
Okay.
And I knew about the rule. I was aware of the new rule. And I was down fishing the Rayback event on Okeechobee, which is where our first tour event was going to be.
Right.
And it was about a month before. And I thought that tournament fell outside that 30 days, and that's why we were allowed to fish it, because I knew that we were allowed to fish it. There were some other tour pros there for that event. But it turns out there's a stipulation in that rule, an exemption pretty much, that allows you to fish a tournament even if it falls in that window, as long as it's a sanctioned event and it's a pro-am format. And I wasn't aware of that portion of the rule, so the first day I was there, I practiced with a friend of mine from Santee Cooper. He was down there fishing the Redback as a co-angler.
Okay.
And he fished with me one day, and then I fished by myself the next couple of days and never thought anything about it until about a week before I was scheduled to leave for the tour. Nobody knew that I was even with that guy, but somebody sent me a text about another angler and who they practiced with. It just got me to thinking, you know, well, I wonder if that rule was in effect, you know, while we were there. So I looked it up, and sure enough, I realized it and made the call shortly thereafter to the tournament director and told him about what happened. And, you know, he pretty much had no choice except to DQ me. And that's how my year started off. You know,
wow.
I had my hopes here, you know, all off season was just looking forward to it and just, you know, took a devastating blow before the season even got off the ground.
We got off with a bang on this first question, but for those of you listening out there that don't keep up with the FLW Tour and know how these things work, it's a point system. Just like if you watch NASCAR, you know, every race you build points. The FedEx Golf Cup, you golf and you raise points, and those points determine your standing during the year. So when Anthony says, you know, I messed up a little bit, I called Bill Taylor and he disqualified me, you started off one of six events of the year with a big fat zero, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I was one full tournament, you know, behind the eight ball before the season even started, which, you know, under normal circumstances makes it just about nearly impossible.
Right.
You have to have a really special season. And it had only been done, you know, to my knowledge, only once prior, where a guy zeroed in the tournament. This was during the course of the year, not the first tournament.
Right.
But he zeroed one and got 0 points and still qualified. So I knew it had been done by one other angler, but it was just, it was a tough pill to swallow, I can promise you.
Well, and not only was it, you know, the right thing to do, but we're talking a lot of money here because each one of these tournaments pays out about $100,000. The FLW Cup was $500,000. So, you know, we've got guys cheating down in Alabama for $1,500 by stowing fish in a fish box and going and getting it from under the dock, and you're turning yourself in for something that has nothing to do with the tournament you're even fishing in.
Right. Exactly.
Which is a lesson for all of us out there listening. You know, it may be tough and the consequences may be dire, but you never know the outcome when you do the right thing.
That's
all right.
Sure. Let's move on to a different topic. Sure.
Okay. Well, one that's kind of tied to it. All right. I know you said that just about made you quit the tour. What kept you fishing?
Well, you know, obviously I was in a situation where there were probably some knee-jerk reactions. You know, very emotional, and And I don't think that there's probably any scenario out there that would have, you know, that I would have followed through and not fished. But yeah, when that first happened, it for sure crossed my mind. You know, I was just so geared up and looking forward to having the chance to qualify for the Cup in my backyard. And that's what just made it so hard to accept, was that I just, in my mind, I felt like I had blown my opportunity to qualify for that championship on my home lake, where I felt like I had a really good chance to do well. You know, I had a chance to redeem myself a little bit from the last time we had that Cup there. And,
right.
And chances are, you know, we may never have that tournament there again the rest of my career. So I just kind of felt like, you know, I just blew my one and only last opportunity to do this tournament here on this lake. And it did. It crossed my mind. Like, you know, is the season even worth fishing the rest of them?
So, right.
You know, I thought about it, and I was, this is what I do for a living. And that was probably what, you know, once I realized and thought about, well, heck, what would I do if I quit? It didn't take me long to realize, okay, well, you know, my best option is just to keep, you know, just keep this thing going and just try to make the best out of the situation. And my wife helped a lot. You know, my wife definitely helped a lot, and, you know, tried to pull my spirits up and lift my spirits up from where they were. And so without her, yeah, the whole season wouldn't have been possible without her help, for sure.
Yeah, she wrote an article I read and said that she was, when you first mentioned that, she goes, I'm going to be in for a long, difficult year in summer if he doesn't fish the tour.
yeah, she wouldn't know what to do with me.
All right, FLW Cup on Lake Murray, your home, really important for you to be there. But those bass on Murray in August, they're moving, chasing shad and herring. It's your home waters, but being your home waters, does that give you any more of an advantage over anybody else, or is that time of the year just a toss-up for any tournament?
It's a little bit of both. Every time we go somewhere in the middle of August like that, you know, some bets are off the table. You know, there's always going to be some things, some off-the-wall patterns, you know, off-the-wall parts of the lake that, you know, local anglers don't think they're good. That always happens that time of year. But at the same time, I definitely had an advantage. You know, I had an advantage here because I was, you know, I was familiar with the lake. And I didn't necessarily have a whole lot of experience on the water in that time of year. I just don't fish much in August because everybody knows how hot it is.
Oh,
down there.
Boy, it was hot.
Which that probably helped me out in the long run because I didn't really fish off past history, which that's one of the problems that local anglers run into sometimes in a big tournament. They remember places that they've caught them for years and years, and you kind of get, you fish too much on history and not on the present. So I didn't have to worry about that. You know, everything that I fished in the tournament was something that I either found this year, or maybe even last summer. I fished a little bit last summer, but I definitely had an advantage out there in that deeper water, knowing where a lot of those places where those fish tend to school.
Right.
And I just felt like if I had enough of that stuff, you know, if I had enough of those schooling type places and then a couple other backup patterns, that I knew I had a chance. You know, I didn't know if I was going to win or not, but I knew I'd have a chance if I could make it into the thing.
And that was the road, was making it into it.
Exactly. Yeah, a long road, but yeah, it ended up at a pot of gold.
It did. I followed you around out on the water some Thursday and Friday. And for those of you who don't know what in bass fishing, you have a gallery, which is, you know, other guys with bass boats who kind of follow you around the lake while you're fishing. You know, Thursday, Friday, I didn't make it out there Saturday and Sunday because I was back here. The gallery seemed to be really nice, stayed off of you. Were they that good Saturday and Sunday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were. I mean, they were fine all 4 days, no doubt. And I enjoy being out there and having people behind me that, you know, if I want to talk to somebody for a little bit, you know, I have somebody I can have a conversation with. It's just nice. It's just nice having people out there that are showing support.
Yeah.
It's no different than any other sport. You can ask any sports star, or not necessarily star, but anybody that plays sports, would they rather play in an empty arena or a, you know, stadium, or would they rather play somewhere where there's people watching? And I think they'd all probably agree that it's just more fun when you know that you have support from other people. And I think it makes you focus more and try harder. And I think it's the same for fishing.
That's great. I talked to you Friday after the weigh-in. And, you know, Thursday morning and Friday morning, you went to a specific area on the lake where you found some fish. Thursday morning, it was really good for you. Friday morning, pretty good to you, but you decided to leave a lot earlier. And you ran to the dam, and we followed you, and you weren't at the dam more than 15, 20 minutes and packed up and ran somewhere else. And you were joking Friday night that anybody wanted to follow you around Saturday and Sunday would need a full tank of gas.
And if anybody stayed with me all day, they probably burnt most of it. I held true to that statement. I did a lot of running. You know, like I said, that first morning on Thursday, they couldn't start off any better. And I had no idea that it was going to be like that on my starting spot. I didn't realize it was that good and there was that many fish there. So it was a special place. And then that kind of petered out after that first day, which I had a feeling it might. And I did a lot of fishing in a lot of different areas on that second afternoon, just looking for another section of the lake that I felt like I might concentrate on those later days. And it just never materialized. And that second day was really tough on me. I only caught three fish off that starting hole and just fished a lot of water that I felt like could have been productive, and it wasn't. And that's when I decided to make a move late in the day and ran way up the river and to fish in shallow brush and caught a 5.5-pounder, which really salvaged my day on day two. It gave me right at 10 pounds or a little bit over. Only with four fish, though. And that kind of keyed me in as to what I felt like I needed to do the next day. And so I actually caught two real key fish using that same pattern late that third day. But, I mean, any one fish, I can't put one finger on a fish and say, you know, that's the one that won it for me, because any one fish, I needed all of them.
Right.
I was winning by now.
Speaking of not one fish that won it for you, did you think you'd lost a fish that might have won it for you Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, I knew, you guys bear with me, I got a conference line over and headed to the stadium right now, but I knew I lost one on Sunday, on that final day. It was early in the morning, and you never really necessarily get the feeling when you lose one that early, you don't really feel like, you know, I just lost the tournament. But I knew that it was a big one, and I knew that it would really have helped me.
Yeah.
But it helped me from a psychological standpoint. I caught my second biggest fish about two casts after I lost that one. So I didn't dwell on that one fish for a long period of time, which is good to kind of, you know, clear that out of your head. And that allowed me to keep fishing and not worry about it. But that fish was probably, you know, it would have given me a little bit of a cushion for sure. So if I lost any one fish during the tournament that I felt like I needed the most, it was definitely that one.
That final weigh-in Sunday was absolutely incredible. Like, Steve Kennedy came up there 10th place. Now, there are only 10 guys fishing on Sunday. 10th place, weighed in 20 pounds, 2 ounces. I'm sure all the other guys on stage right along with you were like, uh-oh, somebody else going to have another bag like that one.
Yeah, I knew. I mean, I knew that he had a really big bag. You know, it doesn't take long for the rumor trail to start. You know, when a guy catches a big bag, we all had heard and thought it was actually bigger than that. We had heard in the low 20s easily, like 22 pounds at the minimum. And I didn't even care what everybody else had. When I already had 22 pounds, and I knew I didn't have enough to even come close to that. But, you know, at that point, I wasn't too worried about what anybody else had, because I knew I probably wasn't going to win. So when he did weigh in and it was only 20, then, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, the juices started flowing a little bit, because I thought, you know, maybe I do have enough to squeak by that. So that final weigh-in was definitely a lot of ups and downs. Now, I went into it, I walked up on that stage thinking there's no way I had a shot to win. You know, and then he weighed in and I thought I did. Canterbury weighed in and passed him, and then it went right back the other direction, and I felt like I probably didn't have enough for him. And it was just back and forth like that all the way to the end. But definitely, you know, from my standpoint, it was the most dramatic weigh-in that I've ever been a part of. And, you know, from what I've heard from the people that watched it, they kind of agreed with that.
Oh, look, my whole family was sitting there right in the front row, and my wife and oldest daughter are, you know, bass fishing. Okay, you know, my little one is all in it. But from the minute that weigh-in started, they were in it. I mean, actually, my oldest daughter had tears in her eyes when you won. So,
really?
it was just amazing to watch people get sucked into that weigh-in. It was that incredible. Well, I'm sure I'm not the first person to ask you this, but what was it like at the moment you heard this? Hang on.
Well, here we go. Let's make this official. You need 12 pounds and 1 ounce to win your second Forestwood Cup. A limit of bass for Brett Ayler worth 11 pounds, 10 ounces. Your champion is Anthony Gagliardi. Wow.
What was that like?
it was special. If you can see me now, that still puts a huge smile on my face listening to that. It was a whole year's worth of emotions, negative emotions, positive emotions. It was just a whole year's worth of emotions that kind of came up to, you know, just that one point in time where just it was either going to happen or it wasn't. You know, I've been building up to that, and it's hard to explain even still, you know, a month and a half out, it's still hard to put into words, but I've never wanted anything as much as I wanted that tournament. You know, Angler of the Year, all that stuff back then when I was in the running for that, even the year I won it,
I didn't want that near as bad as I wanted this. Just totally new to the way the year started out and just everything that I, you know, had to endure to get there. And it was just going to be really tough on me to have gotten that close. And if I'd finished second by just an altitude, it would have been really tough for me to handle that. And it was just a huge, you know, huge breath of relief. You know, a lot of emotions flowing. My family running up on stage to greet me. It was, you know, I'll probably never top that moment, you know, in the rest of my career. And, you know, even saying that, I mean, I'm completely 100% fine with that because there's not a lot of anglers, you know, get to experience, you know, that kind of thrill and that kind of satisfaction from winning, you know, something on that stage on your hometown, like, you know, in front of so many supporters, you know, after a year like I had. So I'm really blessed to, you know, have been able to just finish it off and do it. And like I say, I'll probably never top that the rest of my career. It was a really, really special moment for me.
It was absolutely incredible. That place just erupted. Not only was it everybody there knowing what kind of year you had, but the anticipation and then a one-ounce win, 4 days of fishing, 45 other guys out there who all fish for a living just like you, and they all had the same chance, and it comes down to an ounce. Incredible.
I made it in the cup by an ounce. A lot of people still don't know that.
That was a Kentucky leg.
Yeah, I tied to the last spot into the cup. So if I'd have had one ounce less than what I had, I wouldn't have made the tournament. But, you know, it was nerve-wracking, but I don't want it to be any other way. I'd rather have won by 1 ounce than by 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Just because it just makes it that much more safe. I just think it was a fitting end to the year, for sure.
It was a great one. Now, something fun. I'm not going to ask you what you threw. Everybody can read that you threw swim baits and this sort of thing.
Right.
But if you could choose a month, and I'm assuming you'd pick Lake Murray, and I could be wrong in that, but a month, a lure to throw, and it was just you having fun. I mean, you obviously love bass fishing, but this would just be having fun fishing. Where would it be and what would you throw?
Okay, that's pretty easy. it would be Lake St. Clair.
Lake St. Clair.
Detroit River. Probably, the month is hard because being up there in June when those big smallmouth are spawning is outstanding.
Okay.
It's really hard not to pick that. But I think that going up there in late summer, like in August, September, throwing a crankbait of all things, and like St. Clair for those big smallmouth would be my number one fun day of fishing. If I could just go do that, you catch so many fish out there, big smallmouth, and they hit that thing so hard, it's just unbelievable how hard they hit that crankbait. You just throw it out there in that open water 2 miles off the shore, any direction you want to cast, and just burn it back to the boat as fast as you can, and they will try to take the rod out of your hand every time they hit it.
And I've done a little bit of smallmouth fishing, so I understand exactly what you're talking about. They hit it like it owes you money.
Right, yeah. They don't just want to eat it. They want to hurt it.
Well, I don't know. If you give me just a second, I don't know how much press your wife, Kristen, gets, but I ran across an article that she wrote for the FLW about last season, and I just wanted to read it for you, for the people listening. It's just a fitting kind of end of your whole year, and it starts out, "We learned a lot this season." This is Kristen talking. "Anyone can make a mistake. Self-respect is the reward for admitting that mistake and dealing with the consequences as best you can. You should never give up. Striving to stay positive is the best way to recover from life's hard times. And foremost, always trust God and be thankful for the blessings He bestows, especially the ones hidden beneath the blanket of trials." And if you had a blanket of trials ever in your life, it was probably last year as far as professional bass fishing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she summed it up as best she could. You know, as far as, you know, career and things like that, it's, you know, that was definitely a blanket of trials for me. And everything she said is true, and there's something that I hope that I can really take to heart from this point going forward and just, you know, learn from this, learn from that whole experience, and just understand how important it is to remain positive and have faith. And, you know, that's how you endure situations like that. So hopefully, and I think I have, you know, I think that I can, you know, go forward from this point with that mindset and mentality, and I think that it should propel me to even greater things in this career.
Well, that's great. Well, look, I want to thank you for making the cup. That being down there was my first real media event. Wednesday, when I pulled up to media day at the ramp, I was intimidated. I kid you not. You know, I've dealt with the IRS for 26 years, and I didn't think I could be intimidated by anything, but I was intimidated. You guys were so nice. I mean, you know, willing to talk to me, and you know, at the weigh-ins, at the launches, it was an event I'll never forget, probably never one I'll be as excited to be a part of, unless you repeat next year. Now, are you going to make me come to Hot Springs, Arkansas?
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It sure would.
Now there's a new storyline for me, at least. I'll be in the discussion now. You know, will we have a second-time winner? So
right.
I can get to be included in that. And it's a unique situation where I can look forward to that event already. You know, most of the time you can't do that. You don't want to start looking ahead to the championship because you got to make sure you qualify. But, you know, from having won that one, we have the automatic berth in the following year's championship. So
right.
I know I'm going to be there and have a shot at it. So that'd be pretty amazing for me to, you know, win during the circumstances that I did this year, and then the next year be the first one to claim a second victory in that thing.
Then I'll go ahead and put it on my calendar to be there.
Sounds good. I hope I see you there.
Well, thanks for being on the show. You got about 4 minutes to make it to the game time at 3:30.
Oh, it's fine. That's fine. I can meander in there whenever.
Well, I'd like to touch base with you from time to time, keep up with what's going on, and maybe have you back on the show as the season starts.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to anytime you like.
Great. And Seattle was a good trip for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I went up there, and I'm coming out with a line of rods that'll probably be, you know, first part of next year, and you know, spent some time out there with the guys at Batson Enterprises. And I don't know. I don't have a name for Rockham yet. So all the listeners out there, yeah, if you got a cool, catchy name, put it on my Facebook page, because I've been racking my brain trying to come up with something, and I've been struggling with that. So, yeah, I'd be interested to get some other people's ideas. But
well,
it'll be a lot of fun. I've never done anything like that before, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, as far as being creative, you are asking the wrong person. But I know there's other people out there who have tons more than I do. Maybe somebody will hear it and come up with a name for your garage for you.
Yeah, great. I'll give them a free fish. Whoever picks the name, if I use it, I'll give them a free fishing rod, the very first one.
There you go. Anthony, great talking to you. Great story for the year. Like I said, probably one of the biggest weigh-in finals that FLW will ever see again. And, look, go have fun watching the game.
All right. Appreciate it. Good
yes,
time.
Sir. Wow. You know, a rule like that, you and I don't know, how much would we jeopardize? Well, he won $500,000 at the end of last year, or in August on Lake Murray, so at least $500,000. But I wonder, you know, I didn't ask him. I didn't even want to go there, but what would that win have been like for him if he hadn't come clean, so to speak? And I know I read all the stories. I mean, he called Bill Taylor, and Bill Taylor pretty much said, there's nothing I can do for you. You know, the rules are the rules, and you're disqualified. And it 30 days before the season, I mean, it had nothing to do with the fish he was going to catch during that tournament. But he's really nice. Those all the pros down there, and I met them all, you know, Casey Ashley, Matt Airy, the guys from North Carolina, Brian Thrift, met some guys from, you know, Steven Johnson from Texas, Brad Knight. Just a bunch of nice guys to be bass fishermen. You know, how cool would that be to be bass fishing for the living? But it was a great time. I really enjoyed meeting Anthony. He's going to be a regular on this show starting the first of the year as he goes through the 2015 tour with the FLW Cup on his way to Hart Springs, Arkansas. Hope you look forward to that, and hope we create some support from him since he is a hometown boy. Look for him to be on the radio show with us later on. New Year's resolutions. I'm sure you made some. I made some, too. I want to fish more. That's one thing I really enjoy doing year-round. I'm also going to do more for habitat. You know, we're cutting timber at the farm this spring, and there's going to be lots of cleanup work to do, lots to get it back to where we like it. But, you know, I was over there the other week and actually saw a covey of 8 quail alongside the road, and it really, I was, wow, I haven't seen quail over there in years. It actually gave me some hope. Maybe there's some future for a covey or two of quail around the farm. So look out, bare root bicolor Lespedeza. I'm coming for you this spring. Don't have a whole lot of time left, so we're going to go to Chuck Norris for this week. Chuck Norris once broke a mirror over the head of a black cat while standing under a ladder on Friday the 13th. The next day he won the lottery. Yeah, we should be so lucky. Anyway, that's all for another show. Actually, the year of Woods and Water, first year of Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'd like to thank everybody that listened. Thank you all my guests that came on the show. Thank all the listeners. Thank the people here at the radio station, Lori, Joey, Angelo, Dave, my wife and family at home, all my friends that supported, all the people that listened to this idea before it ever happened and then helped me make it a reality. It's been a great first year. Next year is going to be just incredible. I hope you're here with me to part of it. I mean, lots more free stuff coming your way, just like this past Christmas. So anyway, like as normal, make time to get outside. Be careful when you're out there. Take the back roads when you can. And don't forget that camera. I'll see you next year.
In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine?